This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club, because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Johnson plugs it in for Aidan Flynn!
Gregory is in the box, tries to screw him. Is it going to be there?
Yes! Yes!
Oh my word!
Come
it's
on!
It! You're listening to the number one pod for Sheffield Wednesday. This is the Wednesday Till I Die podcast.
EK at the double in win number 7 of the season, and a huge win at that, and the gap to safety is back to 5 points. Other teams being dragged into the mix as well. Hello and welcome to the Wednesday Till I Die podcast. I'm James Mappin, and alongside me this evening to go through everything that happened this weekend is Chris. Chris, first of all, mate, how are you, pal? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you, buddy. Yeah, had a steady weekend.
I know, yeah, it's a strange feeling, isn't it, when Sheffield Wednesday, one, haven't ruined your weekend because they've won, and two, well, played on Friday night, so you had all the weekend to yourself. Did you get up to much, Chris?
No, just making most of it not raining for a change, which, you know. So yesterday I had a full day, went out, took dog for a walk, couple of pints, the usual. Yeah, and then just relaxed today, real.
Do you know what? Like I said, it is much better, isn't it, when Wednesday have won. And you can just exactly do that. Just relax and not have to worry about a defeat like we did last week. So, yeah, it was all good. Obviously, it's recording this on Sunday night. It's a Super Bowl tonight as we sit down to record this. Kansas City Chiefs against the San Francisco 49ers. Obviously, it will have finished by the time people listen to this. Or it could still be going on because, you know, that American football does take absolutely forever, doesn't it, to play. Chris, are you into American football or any American sports for that matter?
Not particularly, if I'm being honest. I know my mate who listens in, Sam's big into it. I don't really get the whole show of it all. It's all a bit stop-start, and it'll take about 4 hours, but about an hour to play.
Yeah, I mean, look, people can't even stay for the full 90 minutes of football, can they? So what they're going to be like for 4 hours of American football, I have no idea. I'm in the same camp as you, mate. It's all right. I mean, look, it's one of those kind of bucket list things for me. You know, if I go to America, I'd like to go and see, you know, ice hockey, basketball, baseball, or you know, all those sorts of things, just to kind of tick it off the list. But, you know, I'm not too fussed about it, to be honest.
Not that one other week at -30, no?
And I saw that. That's crazy, that, you know, some of the weather that they have over there. I mean, look, we could do a whole thing about, you know, American football and everything, but you know, the fact that they wear all that padding in their helmets and everything, I'm probably riling people up that actually like American football here. So probably I'll quit whilst whilst I'm ahead on that one. Let's talk about Birmingham City then. The 2-0 win from Friday night, you know, under the lights in front of those Sky cameras again. Seems quite a regular occurrence, doesn't it, at Hillsborough with the Sky cameras being down there. Chris, what were your thoughts before the game going into it? You know, we've come off the back of that battering, haven't we, on last week, and obviously in midweek against Coventry as well. Were you going into it in high spirits, or were you just fearing the worst, to be honest?
I'll be honest, fearing worst. I know results haven't really gone for him, but Mowbray's a wily old dog, isn't he? So I thought he'd have done his own work, and he knows the league inside out, and I thought it'd be another tough game, tough opposition again. And it kind of did show in first half an hour, to be honest, where I think we're a bit under cosh. We were giving a lot of space to them, but, for once we finally hit back at net and looked a bit clinical on Friday, which we're...
Do you know what, going into it, I mean, every game is a huge game, isn't it, when you're down at the bottom, and I think after the two previous games, you know, like I just mentioned there, Huddersfield and Coventry, I'm one of those where I just kind of resigned to thinking that's it, we're going to get relegated. I know, you know, Birmingham are down there and everything, but I just thought that, you know, from what I saw last week against Huddersfield, you know, the way that they just, well, they crumbled, didn't they, really? And then to make made 9 changes. So you could argue that there's 20 players in that squad that have played over those last two games, and there weren't many that could, you know, hold their hands up and say, I've had a decent game there, or put a decent performance in. I don't want to say I like feared the worst. I didn't think Birmingham would come here and absolutely tonk us, but having spoken to Birmingham fans, they seemed fairly confident, to be honest. And I would just, it was one of those where if Birmingham had scored, you know, and it were 1-0 or 2-0 or whatever, I feel bad for saying this, but I probably wouldn't have cared. Like, do you know what I mean? Normally, when we go one goal behind, I'm fuming. I'm absolutely livid. And whereas I think the 4 goals that we conceded against Huddersfield is just kind of, I've kind of gone numb to it all. So I will walk into Hillsborough thinking, you know, let's see what happens. And I'm not going to get too disappointed if we get beat. I suppose like the pressure was off in a way, in a strange way, Chris.
Yeah, I've got to a stage, I think, this season where instead of getting, like I used to, get royally, like, pissed off when we let goals in and lose, it's just a stage of, like, apathy. And I find myself laughing sometimes. I'm just like, oh, typical, you know, typical Wednesday, as the old cliche says. You know, I just think, you know, you can't see where... You can see it fight on pitch, and it's just like the heads go whenever a goal goes in and players are resigned to, well, that's that, then that's another one chalked off, you know, and it's just, it's really annoying. And I think Huddersfield were the first game where actually I'd say I were critical of Danny and his, the way the game were managed. I think, you know, we weren't tight enough in certain areas. We give too much space, which will go on to where I think he solved that against Birmingham. But yeah, just a moment, you know, when going's good, it seems to be, and I think the players love him, everyone loves Danny, and he's still young, so I think, you know, these mistakes, this naivety will happen. He's got a way he wants to play, and I think the intensity of it is why he uses a lot of players, because to avoid burnout. But you know,
I think you're right, Chris, I think you're right in terms of, I think these past couple of weeks, I think it first started with Southampton and playing Bernard in that number 6 role. And then certainly after Huddersfield, there were quite a few fans that were starting to see a bit of a chink in Danny's armour, which I think, you know, it's not a bad thing. Look, you know, a lot of people were saying, oh, he's getting away with it, and, you know, he's making bad mistakes and it needs to be called out and stuff like that. And whilst I agree, you know, nobody's perfect. Like, we have to just, it's no bad thing to be able to criticize a manager or criticize a decision. Yeah. I think he'll always hold his hands up as well and say that, you know, he's got certain things wrong. And, you know, you're not going to improve if you can't be allowed to make mistakes, can you?
Exactly, and I think that's why he surrounded himself with very experienced coaches like Chris Powell's and Pedersen as well, because they're kind of guys who'll say, yeah, I think you shouldn't have done that, you know, and kind of give him that advice, and, you know, he seems somebody who's level-headed enough to take it, you know, and just say, actually, yeah, I get you there.
Yeah, exactly.
I know he's got an identity, and you can see the identity of what he's wanting to do, what he's wanting to achieve here. And I think that comes on to, you know, the most important thing is, to me, regardless what happens this season, is keeping hold of him and that coaching staff. Because you've got so many players out of contract. To me, to be quite blunt and trusting Danny, I'd let the lot go. Because you've got some, you know, you've got all of them 14 players. I think the majority of them are well over 10 grand a week. So if you look, and that's, you know, 140 grand, you know, a week there. If you can half that with younger, hungry players, then I think you'd be looking at a Danny Rowe squad there.
Yeah, I think you're right. I do 100% agree. You know, whatever happens this season, we need to stick with Danny Rowe. Chopping and changing the managers, not really, you know, it's not really helping proceedings. I think there's a bigger picture to be looked at, really, and I think we do need just that bit of stability. And you know, he's still learning, isn't he? We've got to remember that he's still learning the ropes. It's his first full time managerial role. Excuse the pun, but yeah, I'm fairly pleased with him so far. Let's talk about the starting lineup then, and we'll touch on the protest that happened before the game as well. But before we do that, he made five changes from the side that got beat 4-0 at Huddersfield in the last league game. In came Akin Famewo, Marvin Johnson, Momo Diabe, Jan Pervaeder and Bailey Cadamartri. Out went Michael Ahekwa, Frederick Pedersen, Liam Palmer, Anthony Masaba and Michael Smith. So it would be Lynn Goal, Valentin, Bernard, Famewo and Johnson as the back four. Momo and Bannon in the two holding midfield roles. Ugbo, Pervaeder and Gassama as that three behind Cadamartri, who started up front. Before we talk about that lineup, Chris, Roll made five changes, like I just mentioned. Are you happy with him making as many changes as he is and constantly rotating the side? Because I've seen a few people now talk on social media and saying, you know, he's just making far too many changes. Where do you stand on all that?
I do think we need a backbone of regular starters. I do think that, you know, one new position, I understand the changes doing because of the high intensity. However, the changes he made for Birmingham were very positive. You know, Marvin coming back from his wobbler, niggle, whatever he's had behind scenes, who knows. Paul seems to be a settled right back now with him, which I understand that because of his pace and he can get up and down. You know, his short passing at times and his final ball are lacking. But I just think he's got that energy, what he wants. Famewo, definitely a good call again for the same athleticism. I understand that, you know, dealing with quicker players. But to me, you know, Bernard, you keep a Bernard and then, you know, at the moment, Bannon and, you know, tin hats off. But to me, I think this would be his final season, unless there's kind of an understanding of a bit part player and a hefty reduction in wages, you know, coming up to 35 next. How many of these gut busting 40 game seasons can he do? And at times with this way, the way we play, has it got the strength and the physicality in there, which I put a question mark on.
Yeah.
Striker wise, I still think we need a striker. There's a lot of pressure on Bailey, which you can see on Friday. You know, he absolutely works his nuts off and he chases everything. But you know, it's a thankless task playing as a single striker, and we know, and you tend to have a big, robust lad up there who can kind of do a little bit of all sorts. But you know, he's learning. He's 18. End of the day, he's learning. You know, and it's a bit of a baptism of fire for a minute, but to me, I'd like a core of, you know, a good spine, what stick in there all the time and can build your team around that spine and go from there and swap and change others.
Yeah, I think I have to agree in terms of, you know, I get the reason why he is rotating the side. And I think, you know, a lot of people say, you know, you've got to keep a winning side. I think the problem is we're not winning that many games, are we? So based on that one, then he should be quite, you know, he should get away scot-free in changing the side pretty much every single week. But, you know, I get it. You know, he's a very analytical guy, and, you know, games have been coming thick and fast. We've been playing, you know, Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, most weeks now, you know, obviously since Christmas, really. So, yeah, it does take its toll. Thankfully, you know, I think we've got Tuesday on coming up midweek, which we'll talk about at the end. But after that, I think there's only maybe one or two other midweek fixtures until the end of the season. So it is very much Saturday. So we might start to see him, you know, play, you know, a settled side, let's say, you know, moving forward. But for me, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because hindsight is a wonderful thing. You know, when you get pasted and he's made five changes, you think perhaps shouldn't have made those. But, you know, when it goes your way, it's an absolute masterstroke, isn't it? So it's a tricky one. I think it's always an easy thing to pick on when you're not playing well, that you're not, you know, that you are just changing the side constantly. But yeah, I suppose sometimes you never get the credit for making the right changes as well. You mentioned Marvin Johnson.
And then the reasons of his changes as well, James. You know, we're talking about, you know, they've got access to all this data, the monitors the guys wear. And I know Darren Moore's mentioned before, you know, there's like red zones, amber zones. You know, if these players are at risk of injury because the figures are there, then they're forced into these changes sometimes, you know, for risk of, you know, the last thing we need is more players out, you know. So sometimes it could be that as well.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned Marvin Johnson, that obviously he came back in. We don't know why he wasn't playing. Let's stick with the narrative that it was a bit of a niggly injury and what kept him out of the Huddersfield game. But you saw, you know, obviously, you know, we're talking about the starting lineup here, but in the game itself, you just saw what Marvin Johnson brings to the Sheffield Wednesday side. And I'm not saying he's an absolute world beater by any stretch, but he's one of those players that when he's not playing, we certainly miss him, don't we?
Yeah, he's a strange one for me, is Marvin Johnson, because he's perfectly suited for that wing-back, because he's neither a left-back, or I wouldn't say he's like a Gassama left-winger either. He can beat a man, but he don't go on big marauding runs, so he's kind of perfectly suited, you know, either to the old-fashioned 4-4-2 or the, you know, and the wing-back, which were awesome unless you're in that role. But I think in the way we play with the holding midfielders, you know, the left back sometimes gets caught defensively, which you can see a bit guilty of a little bit of ball watching at times, but it made a massive difference on Friday. He was slightly out to prove a point.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he obviously got that assist as well. The protest then before the game. Chris, it's your first time on the pod. Before we talk about the protest that took place on Friday night, what's your stance in terms of Deshpan Chansiri and the way that he's managing the football club at the moment?
How long we got, James? I could talk to hours about that fool. I've been one of the unfortunate ones to... I heard all the rumours and bluster going around that people were messaging him, so I thought I'll have a stab, you know. I'm a 40-year-old guy I like to think I do a lot of emails at work. I can send one, and I sent him actually a few questions, very positive, you know, a bit of the old fashioned cliche, the old shit sandwich,
yeah.
And just said to him, really impressed with the signing, you know, bringing Danny in and the team, you know, but, you know, I asked him genuine questions, you know, what are your long-term plans for the club? You know, what's the plans for it to be sustainable? You know, have you actually got a plan? And he basically come back saying, you've got no right to question me. You're selfish. You're an idiot. It was like I was talking to my 9-year-old girl, you know, and I was just like, wow.
Yeah, this is the chairman of Sheffield Wednesday Football Club. And
I just took a stab because I heard he were biting. So I just sent an email. But I actually sent one with actual genuine things, quite a polite. He could have either ignored it, but he came back with some absolute petulant, childish thing that just think summed him up for what he is. And he is obviously kind of the... I don't. Well, he's not. He's clearly not a businessman. He's just somebody who's been born with a very privileged background and isn't used to being told no or is doing anything wrong.
Yeah, do you know what?
He doesn't like it. Even constructive criticism can't handle it.
Look, my stance has been pretty clear, you know, personally on you know what I think about Dejuan Chancery and everything, and the fact that you know I do think it's time for him to hold his hands up and move on and everything. But kind of taking a little bit of a step back and taking me you know me bias head off and everything and what's happened previously, I think top and bottom of it is that he's just too proud of a person. And by that, I mean, like, you know, he hates admitting defeat. He doesn't like losing. I think you're right. He doesn't really like being told what to do. And because of that, I think like he's just making bad decision after bad decision. I was just on Leicester pod and I just mentioned about Gary Megson, because obviously, you know, he played for Leicester as well. And I was just talking about, you know, about in managing Sheffield Wednesday, and I said that sometimes when someone's so passionate for something, you need to, you know, you're making decisions with your heart rather than your head. And I think sometimes that's what Chancery is doing. He's using his heart too much, and he needs to think about what decisions he's actually making, because he's just constantly making bad decision after bad decision after bad decision. You know, he feels like he's, you know, doing the right thing, and like this, you know. He feels like these are attacks on him as a person, and you know, look, I'm not defending. You know, I'm sure there's been some remarks made to him that are unsavoury and shouldn't have happened, and things like that. And you know, I know he's mentioned about you know abuse that his family's got and everything else, and that's you know totally uncalled
and
for.
That is never condoned, you know.
Yeah.
And and kind of like my questioning on the line of that were purely. If I was questioning somebody, you know, like one of my clients or supply chain we use, you know, I'd be questioning the actual business side of it. And I would just literally ask it in question, you know, what are your plans? You know, I'm really happy you've took a positive step with Danny Rowe. What are your plans now going forward? And yeah. I just got shut down like, a, you know, it was like I was receiving off you. Yeah, shut up. Basically, that's all I got.
That's the thing. You know, like, I think he's obviously getting a lot of flack, and I'm sure his inbox is just flooded with loads of messages and everything. I just feel like it's kind of what I said about he's using his heart too much. He's reading them and taking offence at everything that's being said. And I think at times we're saying it to him as chairman of Sheffield Wednesday Football Club, not as Dejuan Chancery, if you know what I mean. I'm sure most people, you know. Obviously, won't bother to message him if he wasn't the chairman of Sheffield Wednesday. That's why people are doing it, and people are so passionate about it all. And I just think, you know, again, you know, they're replying to some of the messages. I just think it's absolutely crap. You know, what is he doing? Like, you don't need to do it. You just need to just.
Well, I know firsthand because in my line of work, I was chatting to a guy who was actually good friends with the old. CEO Liam Dooley, I think.
Yeah.
And he was saying like, he said he was chatting to him at a wedding and he just said, after he'd left to go to Shrewsbury, he was just saying he was unreal. He just said, the guy's addicted to social media, never, ever gets off his phone doing stuff. He just literally on it all the time and just is everything's micromanaged and they just won't let him do his job. He makes a decision, it gets overruled if he didn't agree with it. He just said it made it impossible. And if you look at who've come and gone, you know, he started brightly with his committee, you know, you got your Glenn Roders in there, you know, rest in peace, Glenn. But, you know, you've got all this and these football men who know what they're doing and they lasted months. You know, you had the lady Catherine Mayer who had probably a bit of a sketchy background, but I heard good stuff about her. She come across well. She didn't last long. You know, all these people who know football.
Yeah.
Since the day he came in, he's never understood or tried to understand what gets me is actual British football culture, the local people, the local area. He's never tried to understand. And that's the biggest thing, you know. And it can't, people say, oh, it's a cultural thing. Well, look at Leicester City. They've got Thai owners and they're absolutely superb.
Yeah.
You know, they won't say a bad word about them. So it can't be all cultural. I honestly think it is just how he's been brought up, really, to be honest, and how he is. He's used to being told yes.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we're still...
Absolutely. I think as well, like, a lot of people are saying about change and everything, but he's been here 9 years and things haven't changed. If they did... Fair play. You know, I think we're more than happy to take his money and the money that he's been putting in things. But I do feel like, you know, well, I don't want to say time has come, because I think time had come a long time ago, to be honest. But, you know, I just don't see, I think the top and bottom is I don't see Sheffield Wednesday Football Club moving forward with Chancery at the helm. And obviously there was the protest on Friday night. You know, obviously everyone will have seen 1867 group organised that protest, 15,000 leaflets that they had printed out, handed them out in various places outside the ground. And Chris, it had quite the impact, didn't it, on Friday night, you know, when you saw how many people were holding them up. I must admit, I feel like the tide had somewhat turned since, you know, the end of the transfer window in January. I think a lot of people saw that as a massive opportunity for him to redeem himself and actually back the manager and bring some, you know, additions in that we desperately needed. And then, yeah, to get spanked 4-0 at Huddersfield, I think after that, people might not actually get behind the group and who the group are, but I think a lot of people were, I certainly saw on social media that they were getting behind the movement of asking Chancery to sell up. And they were, you know, like I said, it was weird because, you know, everyone had the yellow leaflets. You couldn't really see many if you were looking round. And then all of a sudden, as the team came out, you know, it looked like a sea of yellow, didn't it? And like I said, it had a huge impact.
Yeah, I think it was. I do think it is time, you know. I think you spoke about it on the on your Boot Room episode, you know, about how sustainable football clubs are. And it just got me thinking just before we came on, I just flicked on the first bit of the... African Nations final, and there were the lad we were linked with, Lookman from Everton at the time.
Yeah,
he's playing for Nigeria in the final. I'm thinking, you know, that other kind of signing we couldn't do at the time, but like, you know, if we'd have pulled the trigger at the right time on certain players, yeah, Adam Reach is rumoured to be going for 12 million, Forestieri, we're going for his money. They're the kind of players you bring in, you recycle, and you make a profit on, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's kind of what we failed over the years to do, hanging on to players like the family members. You know, end of the day, it's a business. You know, if you've got somebody at work who's doing really well, you know, another company comes in and poaches them for more money, you know, or if they're not doing well, then they get moved on. Same.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. I just don't see why we don't do it. Other clubs do it, and it's obvious that's how you run a football club, you know. And look, don't get me wrong, at the time when the rumours were that Forestieri were going to leave, I'm one of those thinking, I don't want him to leave because I think he's a fantastic footballer. But that's where I talk about making decisions with your head rather than your heart. You know, your heart's saying, I don't want him to leave, but your head's saying, well, wait a minute, if I can move him on for, you know, X amount more than what we've invested into him, you know, you get your money back, and then it's the whole Moneyball system, isn't it? You know, you buy a couple of players for, you know, £1 million each. One might be terrible. Two might be average. One might be an absolute world beater. And you know what I mean? And it pays for it all again. And you just repeat that cycle over and over again. And
like the rumours go round and round and round. You know, a few years ago, they were like Liam Palmer to Forrester and his purple patch and getting called up for Scotland, you know, and they were figures over £1 million quoted. That would have been a good time, you know, for there and then, you know. And, you know, it might be, you know, through and through, you know, works up lad, wants to do best, but, you know, it is a business at the end of the day, and you need to go forward. And this losing money and ticket prices, which we won't, I mean, you know, we don't have to go into much detail out, but the whole point is there's the Prestons, the Millwalls, all smaller clubs with normal ticket prices who are running sustainably in our league, and they're getting less revenue because they're averaging 12,000, 15,000 a game, you know. And if these clubs can be run properly, you know, let's run it proper. That's why I said, you know, get rid of, you know, sentiments aside, let's release some of these big earners and put an internal wage cap. Our highest earner will be £10,000 a week, for instance, and we're only going to have three or four of them.
Yeah, the problem is with that, Chris, is I think the fan base, as a fan base, we need to realise that as well. There's still a lot of fans out there. I'm sure there's fans that are listening to this as well that think we're still a massive club and we should be playing in the Premier League. The fact of the matter is that we've not been there for, you know, for 24 years and probably, you know, it feels like we're not going to be there for certainly at least another 10, the way that it's going, and probably even more than that. You know,
it's evolved so much now. It's evolved that much, the money and the gap, you know. We're now in the realms of possibly Stoke Cities and Birmingham's rather than your Everton's and your Leeds and stuff like that, you know, and that is the reality, what I think we have to realise. And, you know, you might have to have 5 years of, you know, type thing. But, you know, if again, going back to Transier, you know, you invest that money in the youth development, in the scouting, you know. Only a few years ago, you know, we beat Brighton in the semi-final and look where they are now. They're probably turning over hundreds of millions of pounds, buying cheap, selling big.
Yeah, I know. We're miles off it.
Apart from Man City, Real Madrid, probably, you know, everyone's a selling club. I don't care what people say.
Yeah, apart from us at the moment. Chris, let's talk about the match then. First of all, how big is that win going to be in terms of our season? Because, you know, we've managed to stop the rot in terms of, you know, the performances that we had and the results that we were getting. I think we were 5 from 6 games without a win before that one. You know, the last, I think it's the first win in 7, first win in 5 in the league. Last win came on New Year's Day when we beat Hull 3-1. It just, and I know I said at the top that every game was massive and everything, but I just felt like if we'd not got that win on Friday, I really don't know where the next win would have come from. It's Leicester coming up after that, and it would just been a pretty slippy slope. Do you know what I mean? So that win on Friday was just huge, weren't it?
Which makes the Huddersfield game even more frustrating, really. You know, because you know, if we'd have got, you know, potentially we could have been out of relegation zone if we'd have got a result, you know, and played like that Friday. But yeah. It were huge, and you could see it full time whistle. Danny's reaction to it were, well, you know, evident to see. I think a big weight had been lifted off his shoulders. I think that were the, you know, the thing of still being in with a chance and basically saying goodbye to it. I know he won't give up and we'll keep fighting to end, but it is going to be a difficult run in. You know, I think, you know, away at Leicester, you know, I think we'd be absolutely very, very lucky to get a draw.
Yeah.
If we get a win, I think I'd be showing my ass in Burger King next door, to be honest.
Well, if we do beat Leicester, remind me not to go to Burger King then beforehand, because that's something I do not want to be seeing, Chris.
You'll see a whopper, definitely.
Yeah. Chris, how many times have we been on the receiving end of one of those results? You know, dominated possession, numerous attempts on goal, and then come away having been beat. But I felt like that's how Birmingham would have been walking away, because you look at the possession, I think it was, you know, over 60-odd% possession that they had. I think they had over 20 shots on goal. I mean, what we did well on Friday, though, was resort them to fairly long-range efforts, I felt like. You know, they didn't have many, you know, I don't want to say clear-cut chances, if you know what I mean. They had a few chances, of course, and we'll probably talk about a few in a bit, but on the whole, for all their dominance of possession, you know, it was a bit of a, you know, a ping pong game, weren't it? It was backwards and forwards. You know, there was no midfield for either side, really. But you know, I felt like we limited them to very few good chances, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think on the whole, the team were picked, you know, and I think you know, probably come on to individuals and that, but we did. We seem to fill with Pervada that frustrating gap I always see where we, that in between the strikers and midfield, you know, that final third, you know, we seem to be picking up the ball there and actually turning and facing and actually looking what we're doing. I think it benefits them and also defending benefits when you've got like your Fumeo with a bit more pace and Bernard in there. You know, you're not having to play kind of a deep line. You know, you can afford to go a little bit of a higher line. They look very dangerous wide early on, especially their right back. He was an ache of space at times, and I think that's one of the compromises you have to make with having Gassama there. I don't think he's known for his following his man so much and tracking back. I don't think he's a grafter. Our left wing, we're a lot more tight. It seems a lot more tight on the back, you know.
Do you know what, the Chris? Just on that. I thought exactly the same as you. As the game was going on, I thought, you know, that Dembele, he started on the left, he switched to the right. It looked like they had a bit of an overload on that right-hand side. I don't know if they were trying to target Marvin Johnson or they just realised that Gassama just wasn't tracking back. And at the time, I was thinking, they're getting forward every single opportunity here and we need to do something about it. You know, I was thinking that we looked shaky at the back and defensively we looked pretty poor. But then I kind of, as the game wore on, and certainly, you know, after the event, I've had to think about it. And I think it's just a case of, you know, if we focus too many efforts on getting back and defending, you're just going to get into a situation where it's just wave after wave of attack, you know, and it almost becomes like attack against defence. Now, I'm not saying that Birmingham are that much better than us, that, you know, it would have ended up like that way. But I feel like the way that we were playing, it's just, you know, leaving players up. Gassama, you know, don't track back, you know, past a certain point. I mean, there was times where he did come back, but there was others where it was, you know, clearly left, you know, to be further upfield, and it gave us a bit of an out. And when you're playing on the counter, you know, that clear with the amount of possession that we had on Friday night, it just gives you that opportunity to, when you get the ball, you look a bit more threatening. And let's be honest, a draw is no good for us against Birmingham City. We needed to win that game. So we went out to win that game, and I think it's one of those where you've just got to trust your defenders, trust your goalkeeper, that if they do get into the box, you know, you're going to deal with it, you're going to clear it, you're going to put your neck on the line to make that block. And then also, you know, I think football, you know, it's a massive game of chess football as well. The fact that we did leave players up, you know, Tony Mowbray, he's got a decision to make then, hasn't he? You know, does he commit his men forward, or does he think, fucking wait a minute, like they've left four men up here, like, you know, we can't commit all his men forward, because if we turn the ball over, you know, they could be a 4-on-3 here or something, or you know, and we could end up, you know, giving away a massive chance. So I think, looking back on reflection, like I said at the time, I thought exactly the same as you, and I were a little bit worried, but I think Danny Rills just, you know, rolled the dice a little bit and thought, you know what, we need to cause a threat. And look, it worked at the end of the day, couldn't it? Because we did just about deal with everything, you know, that was thrown at us, and we managed to get two goals of our own. But I do agree, at the time, it did feel like it were a bit of a knife through butter, weren't it? As they were coming forward. Let's touch on some of the more, you know, things that happened in the game. It only took 15 minutes to score the goal. I didn't know it was 15 minutes because obviously Chancery thought that it turned the scoreboard off so that you could save a bit more on electricity bill, you know. So I had to look after the game to find out what time we actually scored the goal. Excellent work by Poveda. You know, we haven't spoke about him yet, but you know, he did fantastic down that right hand side. I think it's Valentin that finds him, you know, gets half yard at the byline. Ugbo just takes up that position on 6 yard box. You know, if you look at the defender, he's got to move across, because Poveda's gone to that byline. He's got to guard against that ball across that 6 yard box. Just leaves Ugbo in you know, with a bit of room. He can't get back in time, and he just sweeps it in. Keeper gets something on it, but you know, it's a good enough shot to get in, you know, to get in the back of the net, and you know, it's a good finish in the end. And it was just a fantastic start, weren't it? 15 minutes in, it's what you need, and I think it's definitely what we needed in that game.
Well, we just don't score early goals, do we, normally? So it was good, you know, there were a time when we were getting loads of early goals. But now what I've seen since then is a really good, I forgot who shared it now, was a breakdown of that first goal. And you don't realise it, right? It's actually a part of the tactics of it. Because if you see that we get the ball and then we end up recycling it, you know, some people in Hillsborough will be moaning about getting it back, but we got it all the way back to Beadle, which then caused Hogan then to close him down, which then opened that gap for what then went into Bernard, who then pushed it into midfield, which then went to Poveda, who dropped in between in that place. So about that gap between defence and midfield, and he dropped into there. And then it allowed, I believe, another passing Caramatri come out from the defence into there as well and laid it out wide down to Paul. And then Paul laid it on then to Poveda, who then moved from there and made a run forward. And if Man City did it, they'd be all over it with Sky Sports, because you could see there were actually a method behind it. And sometimes it don't come off. You know, we haven't really got the technical players really to do it, but it worked to a T, and it just pulled them all over the place.
I've seen that quite a few times in that, you know, you see it a lot from the goal kick where the two centre-backs all split and then whoever's playing in that number six role, whether it's Diaby or Volks or Bannon has done it a few times, they drop deep, they collect the ball, and then the ball goes out wide, and then they spin, and then they move on, and then they're waiting for that next pass that comes in. And yeah, I think you're right. You know, when you look back at the time, obviously you don't really recognise it, because you don't see it, you know, where that move's kind of started from. But yeah, it's one of those that's been definitely worked on the training ground. And I think when you go further on from that as well, when the ball comes into the box, I think a lot of people, you always look at the goal scorer and you look at his movement, but you look at Caramatri again, and he kind of pulls, you know, deeper still, and he drags the defender away. So which means that when that ball comes across to Ugbo, you know, one defender's gone towards the goal line, another defender's gone towards the 18-yard box. That's left him in acres of space. And I'd like to think that that was something that, again, that's been worked on in the training ground. The amount of times that it does my absolute head in when a cross comes in. Now, I've not looked. I don't know if Poveda looks up and sees if he's there, but they just aimlessly put a ball into the box. Now, you could argue that they're just putting it into an area, and it's down to the strikers to be in that place. But the amount of times that you look and it's either one or the other. You know, either they've not looked up to see where they are, or the strikers aren't where they need to be. And for me, unless you're in, you know, unless you're playing like the aforementioned Man City, that we always compare teams against, and you're at that sort of level, just make it easy for yourself. Look, I'm not a football coach. I'm not going to pretend that I am or a manager. But in training, you should say, if you get to the byline, the ball needs to go here. So as a striker, you need to be there, because that's where the ball's going to come. You know, you don't have to look up. It can just fizz it across, and there'll be someone there to put the ball in the back of the net. And I hope that that's what's happened, and that, you know, Ugbo's picked up that position because he knows that's where he needs to be, and Pervada's found him.
Because I watched the extended highlights again just to recap myself about an hour ago, and he does actually look up, just Poveda. He takes on that guy, and he actually does know that Ugbo's dropped back.
Yeah.
I mean, big bright yellow boots are quite good to wear him for as well, aren't they? So, yeah. But he,
maybe that's it. Maybe they all need to wear big bright yellow boots moving forward, Chris.
It was fantastic, because what he does is, what I noticed, I don't probably speak about it earlier, but that Poveda does actually look for that pass, you know, whereas you've got Gassama, who, you know, is like the... like Sterling when he plays for England, tries to take on the same guy four times, and you're like, just cross it. You know, sometimes it can be frustrating. But I mean, he's young and getting where this Pervader's been everywhere looking at his career, so he's probably picked snippets off, you know. And he just seemed to be that, in that number 10 role, he just seemed to just pick up that ball in that awkward area and just do something with it.
You know, there were times, there were one where he's got the ball on the edge of the box, and, you know, he moves the ball out to the right, and then in next breath, but nope, he's moved it to the left, sent the kid for an hot dog, did him all ends up. It were great to see, because we haven't really got someone that's that good. I mean, yeah, Masaba and Gassama, they try it, but, you know, often they end up falling over at ball themselves and tackling themselves at times. But Pervada seems like he's the real deal.
Absolutely. He had that shot, what just went wide at left post, and the actual skill he does to create space for himself there was absolutely fantastic. I didn't notice it at the time, but when you watch it on the extended highlights, the actual bit of skill there was quality.
Yeah, I think Pervada is head and shoulders above anyone else that we've got at the moment. No, I've got to say, I thought it was a bit of a rush signing when we announced it on deadline day, but yeah, from what I saw on Friday, and I think it was his birthday as well on Friday. I think I'm right in saying. So, a fantastic birthday performance. Birmingham had multiple chances. I'll come to them in a second, but Ugbo had another chance just before half time. You know, Pervada again put him through, and for all the world he's going to score. I thought it was in. I was off my feet. You know, I was standing up thinking he's going to put it in the back of the net. From where I was sat on the north, it kind of looked like it did go in. It hit the stanchion and kind of just rolled behind the goal. So, you know, I'm not going to claim and say I jumped up and started thinking it had gone in and shouting and screaming. But no, I certainly thought he'd scored. You know, it was a quick break. I think Cads that won the ball on halfway, you know, hurrying and putting him under pressure like he does. Set Pervada on his way, and I think it ended up in a bit of a 3-on-3, and yeah, I thought he'd scored. To be honest, when I saw it, I thought that Ugbo had actually gone and celebrated a goal, and then realised that. But when I watched it back, he's actually asking for a corner. I thought he was doing the whole.
I think he did take a deflection, but look of it, it came off his shin pad, but look of it, but I don't think it were going in anyway. It'd have been, well, hindsight's a good thing, but if he'd have tried to knock it other side at goalie, he'd have probably wrong footed goalie as well. But you know, but that was a bit where they had that tussle in midfield, and I'm adamant ref were going to give a foul for it when they were both, like, you know, kicking that Birmingham player on floor like classic Eden Hazard on a Swansea ball boy, like they were just and I managed to kick it out of his feet without fouling him, and then the break were on then. And Pervada were gone, he had side at boot, put him through. Lovely.
What's your thoughts on Ugbo at the moment, Chris, from what you've seen? Because for me, I'll hold my hands up. I said I didn't think he was that player that's going to score you 10 goals, you know, between now and the end of the season. I mean, he's got two now. He's been knocking on the door, hasn't he? I think he's at the post, definitely twice, could even been three times so far since he's been here. You know, a goal was coming, and I think he looks quite bright. He looks like a handful, and you know, and certainly I think
he's very busy. He's very busy. His pressing is very good. He tracks back well. I saw him many a time helping Paul out down that side, and he's actually bigger than he looks, which showed it on that second goal, because he jumped about 40 foot in air, didn't he?
He leapt like a salmon, didn't he, for that goal. Yeah, you know what? Yeah. He jumped that high, he had to stoop down to actually edit. I can't believe how high.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club, because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
He's actually jumped up. I'm just looking how tall he is. He's 6'1", so he's not... He's not up to 6'6" like Beadle and Diaby.
No, but it's still tall.
I mean, he's tall compared to me. I'm 5 foot nine. I tell people I'm 5 foot ten, just makes me feel a bit better about myself. But really, I'm only 5'9". So yeah, 6 foot one is towering over me anyway.
Miles taller than me, even. I think I'm 3 inches shorter than you. Again, I'm a bit shorter. Look at me going. Look.
Yeah, definitely. Right. I mean,
I've got to spend on eight on away matches. No, just, don't really. I'll break it
just to get a good view. I mean, yeah, like Birmingham had a few chances that we kept them at arm's length. I picked out their lad Dembele before we kicked off on the preview show, and I thought he was, like I said, I thought he was a real handful. There were times where we couldn't even get anywhere near him. He had ball on the edge of the box, and you're thinking, are we going to put a tackle in or what? Like, you know, it was almost like we're, you know, I'm sure we knew what we were doing. Well, I hope we knew what we were doing. Obviously he didn't, you know, I mean, he was frustrated at the end of it. He got dragged off in the second half, which the Birmingham fans did not like one bit. They were booing that one when his number came up. But I thought we did just enough with him, because he did look quite good, didn't
he? Yeah, I think he was having a bit of an off game in front of goal as well. You know, I don't think he was on his usual standard as well. He was creating danger, but I think his final ball or his final shot wasn't up to his standard, which if it were, we probably would have been a bit more in trouble, to be honest.
Yeah.
The highlight for their team, for me, I thought Abakun had a very good game. I thought he were everywhere in midfield for them.
Number seven, I think he is, isn't he? He's the one that scored the absolute rocket at St Andrews to draw him level. Yeah, I thought he were decent as well.
He looked very, very energetic, and he seemed to be everywhere again. You know, but he's kind of got it all, hasn't he? He's not bad in tackle. He's quick. He's a good player, very good player.
Yeah, I thought. Yeah, I said I don't think Birmingham are quite up to the standards, but perhaps that's why they are where they are in the league. Do you know what I mean? Like, and we've dragged them back into it as well. What did you think like at half time, Chris? For me, like I said at the top, I had zero expectations, so it's going 1-0 at the break. I were just delighted.
Well, I was quite worried, because I said to my lad like at halftime, I go, Moby's going to put a rocket up these and you're going to see, you know, I thought we'd rode us up first half. I thought we were going to go in for a barrage second, but it, you know, I think Danny got to his staff and got to the lads, and I think we actually were a lot better in second half. I think I think we bored them to death in some ways and really frustrated them.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, you said it there, frustrated. I think that was the key. Like, it's massive. You know, if you can get under the skin of another team and really, you know, you can see it when you're watching the game. When the arms start being thrown around, when, you know, misplaced passes and things like that, and they start having to go at each other, you know, you've won in terms of, you know, you're getting the upper hand, and you know that it's going to be a tough old task for him. And I mean, we had a chance immediately after half time as well. Ugbo again, it seems like everything is him at the moment. I mean, how we didn't score, I've no idea. You know, ball was pinballing around the box. I think Bannon crosses it in, defender gets summer on it, and I think it's Paveda, Gassama, and Cadamarchi, they all go for it.
You mean they all have a go.
I mean, you can't say that they all, you know, neither of them wanted it. Do you know what I mean? There were three of them that were queuing up. I mean, it breaks Ugbo, turns and shoots. I don't think their keeper knows a great deal about it. He just kind of hits him. And then Ugbo has another go. Then it gets deflected wide as well. And, you know, I thought that, like you said, that intensity that, because you're expecting it, aren't you? You're expecting it from Birmingham. They're going to come out 110 mile an hour. So to kind of do that, on, you know, to counteract that and not just sit back and soak it up, to actually go on the attack, you know, ourselves, it just shows that character, I think.
Well, I think that's how the second half petered out, because they had to go for it, and then it left gaps, and then we just capitalised on them gaps, and they commit men forward, and then we have to And then we go on counter-attack, and there's acres of space, and then they're struggling to get back. And it's a tiring old half, is that, when you have to do that. And I think they did just run out of steam and ideas towards the end.
Ugbo got his second goal. Nah, I'm going to hold my hands up here. Johnson gets the ball, Bannon slips him in. And when he gets it, obviously he's on like the, he's at the byline on the edge of the box. He's on my side. I sit on the north stand. He's straight in front of me. And I'm shouting. I want him to fizz it in low and hard. If it hits anyone, you know, chances are it's going to go in the back of the net, or you get a corner or whatever. And when he just does that little dink, like I said, I'll admit it, I'm annoyed. Because I'm like, what the fucking are you doing? You know, it's going to...
Yeah.
Nine times out of ten, those shitty little floated crosses just get headed away and they come to nothing. Old keeper gets it. But I thought it was going out of play as well, so that didn't help either. You know, as he's clipped it up, it kind of bends in and stays in play. But again, I'll hold my hands up. You were a fantastic cross. If he's picked out Ugbo at the back stick in the way that he has done, fair play. And you know, I'll
and if he has as well, that vision to see that Everidge had come right to his front post as well to cut out the low fizzer, is brilliant. You know, last time he floated once at back post, it was Freedom Flint, and we knew that one went as well, didn't we? So,
yeah, exactly. You know. But again, Ugbo, you know, we've already referenced it. He leaps like a salmon. There was only one winner with that one. When you watch it back, he's clocked the ball. He's seen where it's going to land. And that defender had absolutely no chance. It were ball, man, the lot went in back at goal, didn't it, really? And
well, there were 2 points on that, what I noted, really. I thought to myself, one, I'm surprised that, knowing our luck, we didn't get a foul against us for it.
Yep, true.
And for two, to be honest, it takes quite a big pair of balls because he were close to the post there. You know, he just flew straight in like he wasn't bothered.
Yeah, I thought that as well.
Not like your lad for West Brom, that Wyman, who bottled it and handballed it in other day and all.
Yeah, I saw that. Who were that for? That were Ipswich against
West Brom.
West Brom, that were it. Yeah, that were terrible, yeah. Weren't it?
He bottled it. Yeah. He bottled it. I think he's got a posting corner of his eye and thought, oh, I'm going to nut post here. And he just bottled it. But done all of that with Ugbo, I think that post were going to be snapped in half if he'd have... hit it the way he steamed in.
Yeah. And hats off to him as well.
Yeah. You know, I thought, oh, he's going to blow for a foul here. You know, he'll run off celebrating and the ref will be giving foul the other way. But
you said that. No. I thought the ref let the game go, to be honest. I mean, we are going to talk about referees and blue cards and stuff like that on extra time a little bit later on. But I thought that he did let a lot go. But yeah, it would be Sod's law that we score a goal and it would get chalked off for something at some point. But, you know, I'm just made up for Ugbo, really. Well, to be fair, it could have been anyone. You know, any player to have got 2 goals. Hopefully that kind of kicks him on. Football's a massive confidence game and something that we've lacked a lot of this season. I think it's clear to see.
He's playing like a number 9, and I was under the impression, and from what I've heard about him, he's more of a, you know, a Masaba, Gassama type wide attacker, but he's actually... He looks like he's, you know, his hold up play is decent. He actually comes and links well, and he's actually, you know, he's busy, he's strong.
Yeah, but I think Danny Rill's clever enough and intelligent enough to do some quite cute things in terms of Cadamarchi might drop in, and Ugbo will fill in that gap, and they'll interchange and everything. So even though it sets up him playing as a, you know, as wide right, he might end up in that central role. And if you look at the 2 goals that he scored, you know, he's in the 6-yard box when he scored both of them, you know, or thereabouts. So he's not afraid to leave that position where, you know, where he's not going to get choke on his boots, is he? And stay wide right. He wants to be in that box, you know, and you know, both goals, like we talk about Bailey Cadamarchi, all his goals have been one touch. All his have been exactly the same. And when you're down where we are, we don't get many touches inside the box, so when we do get them, they need to be, you know, they need to count. And yeah, he's took both of his chances really, really well. And I'm met up for him. Before we you know, talk about perhaps some of the other players and obviously look at 3-word match review and Leicester City coming up as well. We made some substitutes, obviously, you know, the normal time that we usually do. I think Danny Rill's come under a bit of criticism for his substitutes and perhaps game management and how the performance seems to have dropped off when we make them subs. But, you know, Momo came off with injury, Volks came on, then there was Smith, Ihekwe and Masaba that came on. And I felt like he got it, spot on, and especially Smith coming on, I think that just totally killed the game off for me.
He gives Smith a lot of praise at the M42 because he came on and did the ugly. He riled up their centre-halves. He hustled and bustled and gave away a couple of fouls, but he was just in there doing the ugly things. Just doing that right. I thought Masaba came on and did he was a bit of a worthy mention for me because he came on and did some of his defensive work. There were one where he tracked their runner and conceded a corner by tackle he made. And I thought that, you know, it'd have been gone if it had been Gassama because he wouldn't have clicked to it. And he tracked his man superbly. And he did do a lot of defensive duties when he came on, which were needed, you know, we needed retired legs. And I know they brought a couple of wingers on, you know, like that. Mitoma, he were dangerous. I'm surprised he didn't start, to be honest. He looked really good at St. Andrews when I went down there. He looked dangerous. But, Smith came on, did a good job. Volks played his role brilliant, winding up, just general shithousing, just absolutely superb.
Just on that, Chris, Momo Diabe. Now, I thought he was prime Yaya Toure when it came on, first signed him. He had that cameo against Preston. Obviously, he's had a few appearances since he's come back from injury and everything. And, you know, those first couple of games, he looked so calm and composed. I'm starting to doubt myself a little bit because I feel like he's a mistake waiting to happen at the moment. And it frustrates me a little bit that because I felt like we had a decent player in him. And now, I'm questioning whether I'd even put him in starting lineup, you know, against Leicester. I'd rather go with Will Volks any day of the week.
I would anyway, because I think Will Volks is your kind of man you need in the trenches. He's just constantly there. He'll fight every ball. He'll be constantly at ref's ear. He's that type of player. I think with Momo, I think what I found with him lately is actual close control. And he's like, the short passings, it's either short, it's too long, it's just...
Chris, the one in first half, where he's passed it back to Beadle, one of Birmingham players is literally holding hands with Beadle and he's looking at him. And he plays it back to him, and you know, thankfully, it's, you know, Beadle deals with it and just clears it. But you know, that could have easily been a goal. And you know, look, the pass down from the back, I don't mind it. You're gonna take risks and stuff. But Christ Almighty, like, talk about hospital pass. I mean, what's next step from hospital pass? Because that was it. That he didn't. It could have easily been a goal there, and I think at the time it was only 1-0 in the first half. So it could have been back to 1-1 and unraveling all that good work that we've done.
It must be like a family coat of arms when you get like the DRB surname that you've got to like drop bollocks all the time, like, because I think we've got another one who's prone to doing that, haven't we?
Yeah, but Momo did it against Coventry as well. I think that was in the FA Cup game at Hillsborough. Second half just kicked off, and you know, I know I mentioned about that when they're playing out from the back, and the number six drops deep, and he just passes it straight to I can't remember who he passed it to in the Coventry game, but thankfully he scuffed his shot probably because he didn't realise he was going to get the ball in that area, to be honest. But it's a shame because I feel like maybe he's just too relaxed on the ball, like he just thinks that. You know, he thinks it's too easy and things come to him a little bit too much. But nah, for me, Will Volks will be, you know, and he needs to start on Tuesday and probably for the foreseeable, to be honest, which is a shame because I don't like seeing, you know, or digging players out or anything like that. But no. I think when you're down there, you know, like you said, when you're in the trenches, you can't be making mistakes in the way that he's been doing. Thankfully, we've been getting away with it, but there's only going to matter a time when we don't get away with it. And then we're licking his wounds and making things a lot more difficult for ourselves. Because let's be honest, we're not going to be creating loads of chances. You know, it could be against Leicester that, you know, it might be 0-0. It might be a close game. and then it's a mistake, and then you're 1-0 down, and then it could be 2, and then it could be 3, and then before you know it, that's it, the game's gone. So
it looks like to me with Momo, I think when game stretched, he's all right, I think, but when it's tight in there, I think because of his size, because he's like 6'6", and his legs are that long, the quick passing, I think he struggles with it, because I just think he's got, is that long-legged and quite dangly. I think he struggles to do, get it out of his feet sometimes.
Well, I think it's just a delay, isn't it? It's a delay from his head to his feet, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Because it is a long, old way. That's where me and you obviously don't have that sort of delay, do we? Do you know what I mean? We should be quite nimble-footed and what have you. But I think he's like I said, it is a shame, because I do want him to be good. He's not even quick either. You look at Dom Iorfa.
That wing, that young lad for them, and he were chasing him, and he wasn't even catching him. I thought, his strides, and I was like, God.
Yeah.
Seemed like he was running in treacle a little bit there.
Yeah, like Dom Iorfa just eats up those yards. Momo just didn't have that quality in him, and I thought he would. I think that's the first time we've actually seen him have to chase someone. He's not even quick either. It's a huge shame, because I called him Yaya Toure. So for me on sanity, I want him to be good, but
I think instead of Yaya Toure, we need to think him a bit more of a budget Carlton Palmer. I think
Carlton Palmer off wish.com. I think that's what we've got. Right, let's whiz through the league table. I'm sure loads of people have been looking at it. 3 points adrift of QPR, who are in 22nd. 5 now adrift of Huddersfield, and obviously safety with that as well. 6 adrift of Stoke and Birmingham. 7 adrift of Millwall, who lost 2-1 to Coventry today as well. Birmingham do have a game in hand, of course. I have no idea who that is against. Just looking as well, the goal difference minus 26, which is 10 and 13 worse than the two teams that are they're above us at the moment, which is a bit of a concern. QPR, they're unbeaten in the last 4. They've got Stoke and Bristol next. Huddersfield, they've got to go to Sunderland and Hull, which is not going to be easy. Stoke obviously got QPR, then they've got Coventry. Birmingham, they've got Blackburn and Sunderland in their next 2, and Millwall have got Ipswich and then us a week as of yesterday as well. So that's going to be a massive 6-pointer. Just on that, Chris, yesterday obviously we weren't playing. Southampton took on Huddersfield. Now, I thought when Wednesday aren't playing, it's normally quite stress-free. Jeepers, do you know what? I called it last week. I said that we'll play Birmingham and we'll beat them. And sod's law, Huddersfield will beat Southampton. And do you know what? I nearly had a cheeky tenner on Huddersfield beating Southampton. I'm glad I didn't, because obviously it finished 5-3 in the end and I would have lost my money. But Christ almighty, 2-0 up at half-time. Then they were 3-2 up in the second half. I were pacing up and down the living room. I couldn't deal with it.
Southampton went level. I thought, right, that's it. Fine. They'll go on now and they'll do it. And then when they got another one, I was like, but old Tom Lee's come back to save us, didn't he, with own goal? So
Agent Lee's comes to the rescue, doesn't he?
But I mean, well, I saw their goals and that, and they were just typical counter-attack, smash-and-grab, Huddersfield goals, to be honest. It looked like Southampton, were just having a bad day in front of goal, which we didn't do against us. It looked like they were just... and that were a long 10-hour round trip as well.
But it should be easy though when Wednesday aren't playing. But I think it's actually worse, because at least when you're actually at the game, you've got something to focus your mind on, aren't you? You're watching Wednesday, and the other results. You look at them at the end, and you look at it. It's one of them ones, isn't it? You look at it and go, yeah, 5-3, easy that. I mean, actually, I'm one of those idiots that I look on flash scores, and I like to click on a game and see a result and think. And I like to know how it's actually panned out. When you see a 4-4, I go, oh, who were winning with, like this one here, 5-3. Who were that team? Were that team winning that actually lost at any point? And you know what I mean? I'm that one. Hey, actually, I saw there were one game. I put it in the Discord group. Don't ask me how I came across this game. I have no idea. I think it was in the Ecuador League or something. A team were 1-0 up. Then they had two men sent off, so they're down to 9 men. Second half, the other team chasing the game, they go on and get 3 men sent off in the second half. It finished 9-8, and the team that were winning 1-0 went on to win 3-1 in the end. I'm like, that's for all the world. You know, these people that are scouring these games and putting the bets on, for all the world, you'd be chucking a tenner on the team that's down to 9 men on losing that one. But no, the other team gets 3 men sent off. Mad, absolutely mental.
I once had a fiver, sixfold ACCA coming for me. And when I had my little account in my Skybet, I thought, I put it on and I seen this Indian Premier League were playing. And I looked at league table quickly, and the top of the league were playing like the bottom of the league, and they were winning 1-0. Top at league, and I thought, and I just lumped everything I'd won on just in winning, and it were really, and the equaliser bottom at league, and I lost everything for me. I thought, I'll get a few more quid out of this one. Nah.
So, honestly, I'm
my luck with betting.
Joe, I can remember when I was a few years back now, and I bet. On Bet365, you could bet on the football, and then you could watch the game, and I don't know, it was I couldn't get to sleep or whatever, so I put a bet on, and the team that I put a bet on were winning, and then obviously you get the commentary, but it's not like Sky Sports News where they're talking or anything like that, and it goes off for half time, and you just get the picture of the ground, and you see it's nothing really, like you're just waiting for 15 minutes until the second half, and then it gets 20 minutes has gone past, 25, I think it's half an hour, and you're like, wait, this game hadn't even kicked off yet. Then it just went off, and just that was it. Just nothing happened. I'm like thinking, what's happened here? What's happened to this game of football? I've gone to sleep and then woke up the next day and had a quick look on Google. Apparently what had happened is the team that were losing at half time had gone into the changing room of the other team and had a bit of a punch up, and the game got called off. And I was like, it's just my luck. It's just mad. Yeah, definitely. I think this was in the Argentinian league or South American football, which is crazy, by the way, if you've ever watched any of that South American football. But yeah,
it's quite a bucket list of mine. I won't mind going to like Boca Juniors or something just to.
Boca Juniors against River Plate. I mean, the atmosphere looks incredible.
Just to soak it up and try not to get myself killed.
Yeah, it does look a bit sketchy, doesn't it? I must admit. Right, let me read some of these 3-word match reviews out then, and then we'll talk about Leicester on Tuesday. Ben Leonard's put "Get Clown Out." Obviously, I know we know who he's referring to with that one. John's just put "Fucking right win." Yeah, 100% agree. Paul's put Jan and Ugbo. You know what? I am going to slip up and call him Ian a few times. I can't, it just says Ian, doesn't it? It does not say Jan. But no, it's Jan Pervader, of course. Ben Martin sold on Pervader. Izzy Nick said so much better. TC's gone with emotional roller coaster continues. Yeah, I think that quite sums this season up. Jamie Blacker, shaky in possession. Yeah, like we touched on earlier, I think there was times, but I think you just got to back yourself in those situations sometimes. And, we're down there for a reason, aren't we? We are not prime Man City. One thing we didn't mention, P Green said Beadle is about. He pulled off some fantastic saves, didn't he? Especially at the end, Chris. He's like a cat, isn't he, in the goal, like with the way that he makes them saves, and it could have easily, them chances could have easily gone in, and it could have been a different story.
Yeah, he's very agile, and he's got confidence, because there were a couple of times where they were closing him down, and he played some pass, and I was just cringing, like I were hiding, and I was just, oh my god, if it were, but he's His release at ball, his passing's, you know, very, very good. The only criticism I would have, do a bit at the end, what let Bakun have a shot, what narrowly went wide. I do think, again, like, it seems to be a modern goalkeeper thing, that you don't scoop anything up from crosses in the own 6-yard box. He should have been tearing out. And I think Icky headed it out and it dropped to Bakun, who had another whack at it, and it went far off. But you're thinking goal, it just comes out and grabs that, you know. And that was noticeable to me, you know. It seems Mowbray's dropped him, but when we played Birmingham at their place, that John Ruddy were frustratingly just getting everything up to that penalty spot. He was flying out, just catching everything.
I think that was one criticism when we spoke to the Oxford podcast when we signed him. That was one criticism, that he perhaps don't come for things as much as you should. And I was a bit, you know, on the fence on that, because I think that's a criticism of Cam Dawson, or a huge criticism of him. So I'm a bit like, you know, we've signed someone that just got the same bad traits as the keeper that we've already got. I think some of his kicking as well, long kicks especially, I think we did go long quite a few times, and they were one, he scuffed one and we got away with it. Another couple that went, you know, sailing straight out of play and everything. However, one thing I would say, he does look comfortable with both feet. You know, he can quite easily look to pass it one way and he can switch it onto his other foot and quite easily, you know, play it to another defender. He's not, you know, he does look comfortable on the ball in that regard, which is probably why Danny Rill's gone for him, to be fair. And I suppose his shot-stopping ability, which he showed. I'll read a few more out. Roger Finn needed a win. S25 Al, three new signings and a little winky emoji. Yeah, the, you know, Pervader, Ugbo and Beadle working pretty well. Less is said about Pedersen, the better. We'll leave that one, to be honest. Steve Haggerty, that is better. And Jeff's finished up by saying it's still Chancery out as well. Yeah, just one win does not paper over the cracks is all I'll say on that one. Just another one as well. I tweeted it out on Saturday morning. I think one thing that the protest did show is that supporting the team and objecting to the way that the club is run are not mutually exclusive. You know, they can both happen at the same time. You know, they can, you know, you don't have to be one or the other. And I think it showed on Friday. There was a chant, obviously, before the game. We held, you know, the leaflets up as well. And then after that, they were, you know, 100% behind the team. All right, the atmosphere wasn't fantastic, and, you know, there was a few moans and groans at times, but I don't think at any point we were actually against the team, if you know what I mean, Chris.
Exactly. And I think in terms of that, I think, you know, as you said, they're not mutually, you know, related in any way. You know, you can, you know, support both, no problem at all. And with that, it's the only way I see us getting actually free of Chancery and him selling the club is his family. So if this is going to get media coverage, it's been on Sky, it's been here everywhere, BBC website, we're going to see it. And that's when his family are going to drag him in and say, what's happening here? You know, you get out. And that's the only way it's going to happen, because he won't do it on his own volition. And I think that is the way to it. It's through peaceful, you know, as I said, peaceful protest. Everyone's got the right for it. You know, let's not infight. Let's not fall out about it. Let's just all pull in the same direction. Respect somebody if they don't want to do it. Respect somebody if they do.
Yeah.
But support the team. Get them over that line, hopefully. Pray we stay in this league. And then hopefully things are working in the background, which will force his hand. And then we'll be...
Exactly. Do you know what? You hit the nail on the head there, Chris, where, you know, where you said that, like, you know, in terms of the... I don't say like getting his family or anything, but I feel that the way that it was, it just showed that I think the tide has turned, like I said, and things are actually moving in that way, and people are starting to actually, you know, realise that perhaps this is the right decision. And, you know, I saw a few comments saying that, you know, crap protest. What they're going to do now that they've won a game and everything? Like I said, it doesn't paper over the cracks at all. I think they are two totally separate things. As a Wednesday fan, we want Sheffield Wednesday to win every single game that they go out there. You know, I just feel like that's getting harder and harder to do because of the way that the football club has been run. Right, let's talk. Go on.
And you'll get the comment. It's never a good time to protest. It isn't. People say, well, why do you have to do it now? Well, why not? You know, or let's wait till end of the season, what, and then we're down. And then it's not a good time because then we need to give Danny some respect to build his new squad. You know, he might not put money in. Then the season starts, we have a bad start. Oh, well, you know, we can't protest now. It's never going to be a good time. So as long as it's done, measured, professional, people aren't getting personal and insulting the guy because that's not what it's about. We just try to say, look, we want a breakaway from you. You've done a bad job for 9 years. That's facts. We can't get away from that. But let's not resort to bully boy tactics or, you know, picking on his kids and giving abuse to people. It's not on. So let's just all pull in the same direction. Friday night were brilliant. You know, no disruption, no nothing, just peaceful protest. Everyone saw it. The cameras, the media will show it. And then it'll take on from there.
Definitely. Right, let's talk about Leicester then on Tuesday. We've got Millwall on the following Saturday, but we'll cover that on the debate show in midweek, which, just a reminder, live on YouTube, 8 o'clock on Wednesday, obviously following this game against Leicester, so we can talk about that and, of course, the win against Birmingham. And anything else that you want to talk about, so make sure you subscribe to the Wednesday Till I Die podcast on YouTube to get that one. Leicester, one defeat in their last 15, 16 games, I think it is. That was against Coventry when they went down to 10 men. Of those 16, they've won 12, beating Watford 2-1 this weekend as well. It's no surprise at the top of the league, 11 points clear of third. I think Leeds are in third at the moment. Manager Enzo Maresca from the school of Pep, so to speak, and so far doing a good job. Is there any players that they've got that we need to watch out for? I mean, they've got Dewsbury Hall. He's got 10 goals this season, 10 assists. I mean, Vardy's got 8 as well and only played 900 minutes of football as well. So that's just over, you know, one every 120 minutes or so, which, is any players that you're scared of for Tuesday, or is it all of them?
All of them, yeah, I'll say all of them. But look, leagues above anyone else. And I mean, Southampton against us were awesome. You know, when they can sell that much players and still have about £40 million worth up front in them three lads, you know, you're looking at Leicester and, you know, they're not even like relying on like the talisman, you know, Vardy, who's knocking on in years now, you know, they're actually working through it. The way they play, they're just systematically just destroying teams, are patient. As I said, school of Pep, you know, it'll come. You look at, you know, Man City were frustrated the other day and then 70 minutes they just turned it on and it'll come. And I feel that's what it's going to be like Tuesday, you know. If, you know, it'll be kind of a one-way traffic trying to do the counter and just hope that, the defence and everyone does the job, frustrate them and, you know, might nick one, but be highly unlikely, you know. If we're to get a draw, I'd be over the moon.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at some of the players, they've got Dewsbury Hall, like I said, 10 goals. Mavididi, he's got 10 goals as well. Vardy's got 8. Patson Daka, I thought that Vardy's goal-to-minute ratio were decent. He's got 7 goals in just 670 minutes as well. McAteer's got 5. Iheanacho's got 5. Just a reminder that our leading goal scorer's got 4 goals. They've got 6 that have scored more than our leading goal scorer, which just shows, you know, they're averaging over 2 goals a game. We can't average 1 at the moment, you know, where I think they've scored over 60 odd goals so far this season, which is absolutely incredible when you look at it. Fatawu, he's got 2 goals. One of them was against us at Hillsborough. 9 assists to his name as well. It's just frightening when you look at it. I did the preview show earlier, talking to a Leicester fan And yeah, you know, even the Leicester fans are getting frustrated as well in the way that they're playing. I think that's absolutely mind-boggling. I mean, try and be a Sheffield Wednesday fan for a season if you think Leicester's pretty bad. And that just shows the difference in the quality that Leicester have actually got as well. I mean, the dominating possessions, over 60-odd% possession average for the whole season. That's home and away, of course. You know, and they're just, you know, bullying teams into submission, really. What's your thoughts going into Tuesday's game then? Obviously, it's at the King Power. I want to keep calling it the Walker Stadium. I think it'll always be the Walker Stadium to me, to be honest. Is it just a case of keeping the goal difference down, or do you think we've actually got a fighting chance of coming away with something on Tuesday night?
I've already kind of moved on from this one, and I'm thinking the next home game. But yeah, we just have to be brave. Just have to be brave and strong and keep your heads up and try not to kill them a little bit of momentum from Friday night, really. Just stick to us principles, and as I said, just brave and doggedness is going to, if we're going to get anything at all, is what's going to do it. It's going to be like one of these cup games where a lower league team go to a big team, and it is kind of all them internationals where you play Minnow State and you just kind of camped in your own half and have the occasional break. I do see a bit of that, unfortunately. But, you know, if we've got certain players who can unlock it, like Paveda, Gassama, you know, never say never, there might be a bunch of brilliance, and then we might hang on and frustrate them.
My only worry, Chris, is that in these situations, you need to be clinical. You're not going to get many chances, and you need to be taking them. And I don't think that's something that we've done all season. Having said that, Ugbo's only played, you know, 4 or 5 games or whatever it is. Paveda, you know, he's only 20 minutes, and then a full game against Birmingham. They've not been part of the problem, if you know what I mean. They've not been here all season and not putting them chances away. They've come in fresh in January. You know, they've only just signed both of them. You know, it could well be that, you know, they both linked up on Friday to, you know, for certainly one of the goals. I know Paveda created a couple of chances for Ugbo as well. If them two can link up and we can take his chance, then I do think we have got a, you know, there is an opportunity that we could get something from it. I think you're right. I think we have got to be brave, but I think it's been brave and then it's been stupid. Do you know what I mean? Like, we can't be doing what we did against Huddersfield, you know, go goal down and just go gung-ho and just kind of just carry on the way that you are, or push men forward. Because, you know, Birmingham had a few chances. They didn't take them. I don't feel like Leicester are going to be as wasteful with the chances that we give them. So we have got to be careful with it. I think the difference now, you know, from you know, Sheffield Wednesday sides of other years is we have actually got that pace. We've got the pace with the likes of Gassama, Musaba, that's been coming off the bench, of course. Kanamatri, you know, he's got a good turn of pace as well. So, you know, the good thing is that we can, you know, possibly play balls over the top, and if we leave one of those two up there, that, you know, you never know, they might race through and nick a goal. So yeah, I'm like you though, Chris. I've already put a little zero at the side of this game in terms of the amount of points that we're going to come away from it. And I think it's anything's a bonus, really.
It is. And I think the key to it is not conceding early. I think the big chance you've got is, you know, if you can somehow get to half-time 0-0, they'll then, you know, the longer the game goes on, they'll be pushing and pushing, and then them gaps will appear, and then that chance of that counter-attack will come. You know, so if we can stay tight, frustrate them, I think the key, just frustrate them.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
They might start tripping it forward and getting a little bit desperate. And that's the only, to be honest, we're not going to outplay them. So, you know, we need to frustrate them. We need to get in the face, and we need to just, you know, keep it tight and just, as I said, be brave.
Definitely. Chris, then go on then. Score prediction and a first goal score, if you may, for Tuesday night.
I let my head do it, and I'm gonna say, and I'm being quite conservative, I'm gonna say 2-0 loss, and I'll say first goal scorer Mavidi.
Fair enough. I'll be Mr. Positive then. this evening. I'm going to say a 1-0 win, and why not? He scored two on Friday. Ike Ugbo will get another one, and we'll shithouse him to death and come away with a 1-0 win. And if they do, I mean, well, for starters, you'll be in Burger King with your arse out, so...
I'll do it. If we win there, I'll do it. I'm telling you.
I'll hold you to that, mate. Chris, let's wrap things up there. Massive thanks for coming on, mate. Do really appreciate it. Hope you've enjoyed yourself this evening. Talking about a win about Sheffield Wednesday, what could be better?
Yeah, exactly, mate. I've having a fantastic time. I hope to do it again. I've got, just because he'll kill me if I don't, just say hello to my mate Neil Dunn in Adelaide Owl. I'll just say that before we go. And I know the Saint Macca will be listening as well, mate. So much love you too.
Yeah, great stuff. Yeah, Neil's a cracking guy. Met him at Wembley as well on his whistle stop tour from the other side of the world, which was absolutely mental, by the way, the lengths that he went to. Because you were sat with him, weren't you, for that game?
Yeah, we met Covent Garden and that as well. Yeah. And stay in touch with him. I think he's going to give me a ring it morning, he said, to give him my feedback on me. On my bullshit I've been chatting, I think.
To give you a bit of a pep talk. He'll be, you had to put your tin hat on earlier with your comments on Bannon, so he might be bashing you about that one, but you never know. Chris.
That's another head over heart as well, that one, mate.
Yeah, definitely. But, Chris, yeah. Massive thanks, mate. Thanks everyone for listening as well. Hope you've enjoyed it as much as we've enjoyed recording it. Like I said, make sure you join us on Wednesday night on the debate show. Get on YouTube, search for the Wednesday Tie Dye podcast, 8 o'clock till about 9:30, and you can come up and chat to chat Sheffield Wednesday, and fingers crossed, talking about, I don't want to jinx it and say a win, maybe a point, maybe talking about a point that we get against Leicester on Tuesday. Cheers, guys.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.